NWP Radio.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is April 11th, and tonight I'm hosting with Brian Ripley Crandall, director of the Connecticut Writing Project at Fairfield University, and talking with Jack Powers, a CWP Fairfield teacher leader and poet, who recently published Everybody's Vaguely Familiar, a collection of poems on life, teaching, and the curiosities of the everyday. Brian and I are kicking off our celebration of National Poetry Month today in conversation with Jack, an educator with over 30 years of teaching, writing group experiences, and success as a National Writing Project Fellow. Today, we're applauding Jack's poetic success, his career as an educator, his love of writing, and the new book. I'm your host, Tanya Baker. Welcome, Jack and Brian.
Good to be with you again, Tanya. Yeah,
great. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so excited to talk to you, Jack. I loved reading your book, and I can't wait to hear you read from it. It's National Poetry Month, and Jack, throughout the show, I thought I'd just stop and ask you to read us a poem from your recently published book of poetry, Everybody's Vaguely Familiar. Do you have a poem you'd like to start off with tonight?
Yeah, I'll start with the first poem in the book, Bonehead. My mother signed notes in my high school lunch bag, Love Bonehead, long after we could talk of love. She laughed at the sound of the word, the cartoon image, and love elevated Bonehead to a tender ache that reached across the gap from weary mother to leery teen. She hated lousy and meal, but to her, Bonehead sounded gentler than idiot, dope, moron, cretin. Although dope acquired a softness when my father, deep in his dementia, asked after a long day of song and cake and tears for my five-year-old, whose birthday is it? And my mom, a skeleton herself, after a year and a half of waking to find him dressed in three polo shirts on damp July nights, or hiding the markers so he'd stop writing names on the photos of the grandchildren, said, it's Will's, you dope. And we all laughed at the exhausted appropriateness. Too tired for Bonehead, she took it up a notch. And we all appropriated the word to use when loved ones wore us down to the bone.
I want to say thank you, first of all, Jack. That's a great way for us to start. And I just want to say quickly that I could really imagine you as a teacher from the sort of loving and totally honest portrayals of your family and your life and the kids when you write about teaching. I feel like you have to be super present to be a great teacher. And I feel like one of the things that somebody sort of gets from your poetry is a sense of super presentness. So thank you for that.
All right. Thanks. I should stop and thank my mother right now for giving me such good material.
I was just thinking of all the things my mother and my grandmother used to call me, and I'm not sure I could repeat them on radio.
Well, my leery teenager was home last week from college, and I was feeling like a weary mother, so I could really appreciate the divide across which you try to talk to each other in that moment. Let's see. It's National Poetry Month. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, I was actually thinking when Jack was reading his poem, I've had the honor of going up and visiting him at his school, Joe Barlow, in Reading, Connecticut. And going from the university all the way up to that his campus, it is the most stunning drive. And right now, you know, the post-hibernal emptiness of leaves, they're starting to bud out, so my allergies are back and my nose is dripping. But the water that glistens on the ponds and lakes as he drives up to work are always very poetic. And, you know, one time I said to him, I said, I think one of the reasons why you've been so successful is because you have this beautiful drive to and from work every single day of your career. But, you know, I was thinking also, because April comes with allergies, and as the daffodils are popping out and the crocuses are outside my window, I was like, oh, here we are with poetry month again. It's good to have these days to be able to celebrate poetry, not only as an English language lover, but as a director of a National Writing Project site. And I also know that now is the time that people invite us in for workshops and ask us to do demonstrations and professional development with their teachers over poetry. to counter the test craziness that our nation's in right now, so that we can actually play with the powerfulness and the playfulness and the poignancy of poetry in the month of April.
Alliteration, check.
I didn't mean to do that.
I was going to say, I think you've got your blog for today, right?
Yeah, there. Right.
I'm sort of conflicted about that there's poetry month and then 11 months of no poetry. So but it is an opportunity to, you know, kind of take advantage. I have a poetry day at my school every year, and I invite in another poet. PTSA pays, gives me $250 to bring in. Actually, Brian started that, called me up one time, and I said, I have $300. What can you do with it? I said, I can hire a poet. So I have a full day where the poet and I alternate reading, and kids come up. Mostly it's kids reading on an open mic. So it's just like a one long day of poetry. We take over the library, and we have a lot of fun. And last year I had Diana Getch. This year I have Nicole Caruso Garcia. And so I've been able to get really good poets to come. Right. And I usually try to have a woman poet and someone that's not, you know, my poems are kind of narrative. A lot of people at the end say, is that a poem? Nicole is a formalist. So the kids can hear all different kinds of poetry and people reading it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
The other thing, I need to get out more, and it's a reminder for me to get out and hear other people read, because it's just such a different experience.
Yeah, I love that idea. I feel like we should challenge everybody this month to go out and hear poet read, because they'll be busy at work this month.
Yeah.
And maybe not heard for the next 11 months, but we can.
And if they can't squeeze it in, they could go in May. They should
everybody
know that that's allowed.
I like it. Yep. What about June? Can I see a poet in June?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, for me, I understand that in a way, when you say this is Poetry Month, you worry that everybody will try to squeeze it all in this month and then forget about it for 11 months. But I do love, love, love Poem in Your Pocket Day. And sometimes we have office parties organized around that. Sometimes we have dinner parties at our house organized around Poem in Your Pocket Day. Last year, I was amazing. I was in Italy with my family. I made everyone read poems over lunch in Florence. So we've sort of talked in general about the month, but do you have any particular celebrations of poetry planned, Brian?
Yeah, I'm since I've arrived at Fairfield, they do a Poetry for Peace contest with kindergarten through eighth grade in Fairfield Public Schools and Bridgeport Public Schools. And we put the contest out every, you know, it's an all call. Write poetically about peace, whatever you want to write about. And I had just seventh and eighth grade this year, and there are almost 500 entries. And so kindergarten, first grade, second grade, we get hundreds and hundreds of poems. And it's so wonderful just to look at all those poems and kind of narrow it down to like our top 15. And then we don't give first, second, third prize. We just like invite these top 15 kids to come read on a stage at Fairfield University for the Poetry for Peace celebration. And I co-hosted with Elizabeth Bouquet and Carol Ann Davis. And it's great to get together graduate students, undergraduates, professors, community members, and we all just read and read and read and read and talk about the poems and laugh and see the wide variety of voices and the strange and bizarre ways that kids respond to this prompt. And then the night comes, and when I tell you that families go all out, and I agree with Jack that poetry should be every month, because kids like to share their words. They like to share what they're feeling. They like to share what's on their mind. So with that open mic, our kids come with bow ties, jackets, moms buy their daughters flowers, and it's a huge family event. And one by one, the kids read their poems and there's finger snaps. It just touches me every year. So that's my big love celebration of the month.
Awesome. And Jack, you already talked about having guest poets and having lots of readings in your classrooms. Anything else?
Yeah, I don't. Well, first I should say I totally missed out on this the Poem in Your Pocket parties. Now that I hear about it, because I love a party, I'm gonna have to do that. But I also, as kind of as part of the Poetry Day, I send out. I have lots of poetry lessons that I've kind of tried to put into like a little mini lesson anybody could teach. And I've been sending two out a week for the last couple of weeks to all the English teachers, you know, like, here's a sub plan, you know, your class need a break, you wacky Wednesday, I try to make it. And it also, I think, since I'm retired, I'm handing off my favorite lesson plans.
Aww.
So I try to kind of just sort of talk it up and get people reading so kids can read their own poems. I had a student who actually, I don't know if she invented this, but one year she came up with the idea of poetry blind dates, called them a basket of poems. And she picked all these poems, and they're pretty kind of accessible poems. A lot of them were from that Billy Collins Poetry 180 site that has many great poems on it. And kids could reach in the basket and just pull out a poem, and they go up and read that poem, or they could look through a few and then read it. And that was like a fun way for kids who are like, well, I don't want to read my poem.
Right.
I don't have a favorite poem, but they got a new favorite right there.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
You know, Jackie, just reminded me too of like when I was teaching in Kentucky, you know, we did a poetry units at different times of the year. But I used to do this activity where I call it the poetry drive-by or the poetic drive-by. And I used to say, kids, you would choose one of the poems that you played with in the last month, and you'd have to go hand it to a stranger, either go through a McDonald's drive-through and just hand it to the person, or give it to somebody you pass on the street, or just get some chalk and write your poem on the sidewalk and just leave it. Just leave it, just because I think poetry is every day. And if you come across a really good poem, you read it, you taste it, it just puts pep in your step, you know? And it's like, I'm so glad I read this today. And actually, that's kind of how I feel about every poem that you've ever shared with us at the Connecticut Writing Project. I go home saying, when I grow up, I want to be Jack Powers. I want to write like him, because it's just so wonderful to think about the way you put words together.
Yeah. Jack, I think that might be a cue to read another poem.
All right. I changed my mind on this one. I want to read a poem that is from, this is a student of mine who died. And there aren't a lot of teacher poems in the book, but this is one. And I actually, he was just a crazy kid. He would say and do things. And then after a while, I just said, I just have to go write this down. And unfortunately, he died. And so it's really, I'm more a recorder than a poet here. It's kind of just a shock, I think. So it's called Rob Spanuski is dead. Dead at 18. Hit by an 84-year-old driver driving a 20-year-old Honda. Rob Spanuski, whose engine revved higher than anyone's, dead. Who wrote I Love Redheads on his desk, on his locker. Who stood on a table in the cafeteria and asked a redhead to the prom. Who jumped down and danced from the room, shaking his head when she said no. Who wrote a love poem to redheads from a list of favorite words, ginger, auburn, strawberry, freaking, and one I said he couldn't use in school. The only way to tell if the drapes match the rug is to see that, and that's the word you said I couldn't use. Loved his quad, broken down on that January night. Rob Spanuski, who must have flown in the air like the deer I hit last winter in Maine. Got out of the darkness, eyes as wide as mine, both helpless to stop the sudden collision. Rob, who danced more than he walked, dead. Rob, who called the ladies doll and the men coach, who always neat in khakis, Oxford shirts, Argyle vest and ties for game days, who told his sister, I don't go to school to learn, I go to entertain. He taught me to never ask any questions in class when he said, yeah, I have two. How come my nose always gets sunburned first, no matter what I do? Look, I look like freaking Rudolph. And another, when you wear a robe around the house, you're supposed to feel manly? I feel like a woman. What's with that? Rob Spanuski, dead, who you knew even when you wanted to strangle him, couldn't find his own off switch any more than you could. Who would later apologize and say, you the man, coach. Who, when he launched into the frosty air, might have waved to the fear-stricken driver, might have thought, this will make a great story. Might have thought, as I did when my girlfriend Cam rolled her old Volvo 30 years ago in Vermont, as the black pavement rose to meet my passenger window, so this is how it freaking ends.
You know, I was thinking, as you were reading that, and because Jack and I both teach near Sandy Hook in Newtown, and, you know, the tragedy was yesterday, and it carried with us today. And my colleague Carol Ann Davis has been doing the Newtown Poetry project and working with kids and parents and grandparents using poetry as a way of healing. And Rob, I can't even say that last name, Manuski.
Manuski.
We all taught him. We all had him. We all know him in our own classrooms, no matter where we are in the United States, who just had a flair for life that was just over the top and grandiose. And so anytime a tragedy happens, you kind of need a way to process it. And Jack did it brilliantly with humor, but also a total, you know, applause for the young man that that kid obviously was. Amazing.
And it's just another, I mean, for me, there weren't very many teacher poems in this book, which I guess I probably expected whenever I read teacher poets. And I really appreciated the range of poems that were there in, but I did gravitate to this poem and to the way that there's, like, again, this honest presence, like, this kid will drive you crazy, no doubt. And, you know, he filled up this space in a way that's gone now. It's really, it's a lovely honoring of who that kid really was.
He's alive on the page.
Yeah, he deserved it. It's hard to believe he's not with us. He was very lucky fellow.
Yeah. Well, thank you for writing and sharing that poem, Jack. Brian, you contacted us at the NWP after Jack had a reading at a local bookstore, and I think it would be a great time for you if Jack can take it. I know you're like right there in New England. Some people aren't really comfortable with all this sort of attention. It would be great for you to tell us why you thought Jack.
Well, I am.
A great guest to kick off Poetry Month for us.
Every time Jack shared a poem that he's had published with me and with our local site, I read it over and over and over again. And again, I always say to my colleagues, how does he do this? Like, how does he humor you, pull you in, and then also make you think, dang, you know, that's life. That's life. And, you know, there's the history here is, you know, I participated in the National Writing Project in Louisville. You know, in 2002, and 17 years later, I'm running a National Writing Project site out of Connecticut. And when I first arrived in 2011, I was still working on my dissertation. You know, I was gung-ho, but scared to death of the new job. And at that time, Faye Gage was the director, and Lynn Winslow was the co-director. And as we were running the Summer Institute, they kept saying, you know, like, wait until you meet Del Shortliff, and wait until you meet Jack Powers, and wait until you experience Jack Powers' poetry demonstration. And so they invited him to do the workshop, and he came in, and I got to participate. And, like, you know, within an hour and a half, I think I wrote 3-4 really good poems because Jack was that great of a teacher. And since then, I was like, okay, this Jack is the powerhouse, little pun there, right? And his demonstration of writing poetry is something that I've watched him now do in front of hundreds of kids, in front of teachers. And it's just one of those things that's 150% successful every single time, if that's possible. So I've been inviting him back and forth to our summer institute. And then as a result, to return the favor, he invites me up to his school where I judge writing portfolios that they have for the class. And, you know, I was a Kentucky guy, so writing portfolios were at the heart of everything that I did. And really, Joel Barlow High School is probably one of the only school districts I know of in Connecticut that are really carrying forth this robust, you know, writing instruction, so the kids are getting a wide range of writing experiences in their school. I read the work of the kids, all of them juniors, and it's just amazing to see that their whole school is committed. And I know that that is a result of Jack, right, and other people at the school. So when I was thinking, wait a second, we need to, Jack's published this piece of poetry, you know, everybody's vaguely familiar, it's this book. We need to tap his wisdom. I mean, he's had pieces in the Southern Review, the Two River Review, Southern Poetry Review, you know, Poet Lore, and other publications. And now here's his new book with 40 poems, and it's all collected into one location. And I was like, this guy's a treasure. Like, he's a National Writing Project treasure. And we've kind of been selfish holding him into just this Connecticut audience. But, like, I was like, I know from my Louisville experiences and then my Syracuse, New York experiences. Now here, like, this guy needs to be heard through the entire network. And so I said, I'm gonna call Tanya and see if we can make this happen. And she said, well, there you go.
I said, Brian, you're brilliant. You bring me the best guests. And I was right again. You do bring me the best guests. So I hope your New England heart can take that, Jack.
I never thought of it as being my New England-ness, but it, sometimes it's Brian makes me blush.
Yeah. No. I mean, as a New Englander, I think, yeah. Who now lives in California, where no one blushes ever.
No blushing at all.
I think it's a New England thing, but thank you, Brian, for providing that context and cheering us.
My pleasure.
Cheering Jack to us, because he's much deserves it, I can tell. And we are here celebrating the publication of your book of poetry, but I understand, Jack, a kind of culmination of your career in teaching as well. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your career and how poetry became part of it.
So I'm a special ed teacher. I started out teaching a self-contained group of kids, the behavior problems, basically. Mm. And I was teaching them everything. And because I was a painting major in college, I was teaching them off my high school experience, which I had more experience being a behavior problem than being an academic. So kind of out of desperation, I went to a workshop at Bard, Institute for Teaching and Learning.
Yeah.
And their first rule was you have to write with the kids. Mm-hmm. So I started writing with the kids. I loved it. They loved it. Changed the dynamic of the classroom. So it wasn't me saying, you guys do this and lording it over them. But like, we were all writing together and sharing things together. It was just amazing transformation in the classrooms. So then I went to the writing project in 85. And, in addition to all of the chances to write and all of the great theory and learning to put together workshops and kind of thinking of myself as kind of a teacher researcher, I just met the most positive people and formed a writing group with a bunch of them, because we'd always go to workshops and say, this is great, I'm going to get up every day at 5 and write, and we never do it. So we realized we needed deadlines,
yeah,
and we needed feedback, in the same way the kids do. And Brian mentioned Del Shortliff. He's the last of the original members, but this group has been meeting continuously now for 33 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the poems in this book were written as, I have writing group next Wednesday. I better write something. But the kind of personal essays I wrote then led to writing fiction, I got an MFA from Sarah Lawrence in fiction.
Wow.
While there, I was taking some poetry classes just because I thought I needed work on my language and kind of got hooked. And then I went back and got an MFA in poetry and had a lot of great teachers. And I'm basically lazy, so I need to just keep taking courses, putting myself in positions where I have to write. And so I just kept it up. And I think poetry, too, is my kids were a certain age and I was coaching and I didn't have time to write novels.
Right.
So I could write a poem and be kind of revising it in the back of my head. And it was just perfect for my life at that time. But also, I discovered all this, all of these great poets and had a bunch of great teachers. So, it's like a lot of good things. It started out of desperation. And then, one thing led to another in no direct line at all.
That is what I keep telling my 19-year-old daughter is the way to make a happy life. You don't know what's coming next. You just do this thing and that you love. So I'm glad I will send her this interview. Yeah, okay. And also one of her friends is an English major at Sarah Lawrence. He's going to be gaga when I tell him.
Yeah. Oh,
I also met a poet with an MFA from Sarah Lawrence.
Yeah, one of the things that just...
Great features I had there.
Yeah.
It stands out to me as a director trying to keep generations of this kind of writing going forward is the commitment of a writing group. I mean, 34 years.
30, yeah, no kidding.
And,
honoring that commitment, and also I can imagine so many people in our listening audience being like, I knew I should do that. I'm calling my writing group tomorrow. Like, I feel like this could really just re-energize any number of NWP writing groups.
And I think the key, I think, is that we never leave one writing group without scheduling the next one.
Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, like
right.
Sometimes we have to reschedule, but we've got that next date.
Right.
And that's a time where we get together and say, okay, well, something came up, we move it a week. But that, I think that's one of the keys that we've always just said, okay, when are we meeting next?
Yeah.
Otherwise, just life gets in the way.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. All right. So having re-energized the national movement of writing groups and the National Writing Project. as you've said, you're retiring later this year. I'm sure that I can tell, and I have even heard that the knowledge, all that knowledge that you're taking from your classroom is of course irreplaceable. But is there something you'd like to say about a career in teaching or any advice you'd like to give young people coming in? Or how are you thinking you'll feel in September? What are some meditations on this moment in your life?
Well, the first thing at looking back is I realized how lucky I am. Mm-hmm. I just fell into the school. Some almost stranger said, have you heard of the school? They have a job opening, and they hired me. And as I said, I had no idea what I was doing. And they just nurtured me along. And I actually had one of the few sabbaticals. High school teachers never get sabbaticals anymore during one of the masters. So, but that's, I realized get lucky is not great advice. So
it's not bad advice. Recognize when you've gotten lucky.
Right. Yes. Recognize when it happens and see, yeah, like you said, not, you know, even if it's not in the plan, say that be open.
Right.
But I think that looking back, I always, when I had learned something new, I'd taken a class, often it came from, you know, having a student like Rob, right? Like, I have no idea what to do with Rob. I better go. Here's a class in behavior management for I don't care kids. I'll go take that class.
Yeah.
Or learning new things in the writing class. Or last summer I took a class at Iowa Writers Festival with Diana Getch on intensive free writing, which is something was 1986 we were doing free writing. I fell away from it. And then I realized I had a student who just would stare at the page and stare at the page, and that's what he needed. Mm. It was a great class. It went beyond just free writing. It gave a framework for why we were doing it and kind of the idea of how to keep your mind open to the lucky accident, follow the golden thread, negative capability. There are all these different ways writers say it. But I think that can be true with a career too, that you say, be open to something comes up, even if you never thought of it.
Right.
They think about taking it. But after we wrote our little, we talked about what we'd be talking about, I realized that a key too is to not say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. You get burned out. I know some great teachers that just burn themselves up by trying to do everything. But you can't also say no to everything. And my first principal actually taught me to say, let me sleep on that. That sounds interesting. Because my interview with him, he said, if we hired you, would you be willing to do like extra jobs, like be the cheerleader coach? And I said, oh yeah, I'm a cheerleader, I do that. And he said, here's the contract for the cheerleader coach. I didn't even have a teaching contract. So I signed that. And the cheerleading season lasts all of football season, all of basketball season. I knew all I was trying to do was keep them from killing each other. And I learned.
Setting their hair on fire.
Now on, when he asked me, I say, that sounds interesting. I'll tell you tomorrow. And I'd have time to think, is this a time to say yes or is this a time to say no? And that's hard to learn, but some of the things I said yes to were total surprises, that they were so interesting, but you got to say yes and keep learning. If you can't stay the same. You stay the same, you're getting worse. And it gets boring.
That is such good advice. I actually have just decided that in your retirement, maybe you should speak to like 18 or 19 year olds filled with angst about their life goals. I'm going to hire you first to come to my community.
It's pretty hard to be that. I think it's harder to be that age now than it was.
It seems like it.
Yeah. Because they think, oh, if I don't do this, I'll be a failure if I don't do this. When I was that age, I was like, hey, going to college, Dad, what else do you want from me? I'm an honor.
Yeah, I think they think if I don't stay on the path, but I also think that they have an incorrect belief that if they just stay on the path,
right,
then they're like, then they'll get the life's reward. And right, they're like not looking left or right or asking any interesting questions. Yeah. So
they can just worry enough about it, nothing bad will happen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a hard comeuppance if you think that.
Yeah.
So speaking of transitions and looking out in the world, and maybe we should just have another poem.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this is one of the other teacher poems. I also, as Brian mentioned, we have a great writing center at Bartlett, and that was another kind of accident that we fell into during a time of declining enrollment. A room of computers came open, and we said, We'll take care of this room if it can be our writing center. And we figured out how to do it. And I work with a woman, Maureen Kilborn, who is a genius with grants. And she kind of used grants to help us staff the room. This might be from helping one too many kids. It's called Write a College Essay. Start with your greatest loss, biggest obstacle, the woman you love, the man you killed. Open your heart. Relax, show the real you. Write like your hair is smoldering. This is the most important paper of your life. Be unique. Never mention the word special. Be specific. The time your mother wished she'd never adopted you. The night your father died in the fire. Make the reader see the veins in her neck. Feel the words strike, the door slam. See you in the garage smoking by the turpentine. See the garage ignite.
See the garage ignite.
Oh my goodness.
If I was reading a bunch of college essays, I'd like get that one. I'd be like, okay, I want that kid in my school.
See, this is what I'm talking about. I coached a bunch of kids when my daughter was a senior in high school, mostly only to make her listen to me. And I was like, oh, something new. Set your hair on fire.
Jack's been igniting classrooms in Connecticut, you know, definitely much longer than my tenure in the state. I'm thankful for the light, you know, that he's brought us off as educators, writers, and colleagues, and teacher leaders, and writing project folk. Just words like that just always make me say, all right, we need to have poetry month be poetry every day, 365 days a year, that celebrate such work.
See, exactly. Poetry all year long, as though we had to tell anybody who's listening to this show.
Right. That does remind me of another thing that I've used more and more. And this came from a poetry class I took from Mark Wunderlich. The first day he said, my job is to help you each become stranger in your own way. And it was really interesting because most of the classes I take, the teacher teaches you to write like them and you learn a lot of good things and then later go apply them. Yeah. But we became more and more different. And I start my writing classes with that. Like, the thing you have to offer the world is your strangeness. Develop that. And so this is a strange poem, I'll admit, but see, you know, go with it. That's really what you have to offer the world, not doing the same thing the same way everyone else does. Write a paper no one else can write. But I think that's teaching too, that we have, everybody's got it.
I really needed to talk to you today, Jack. This is so lovely. I'm glad to be able to put this on the radio to kick off our celebration of Poetry Month. Let's give you an opportunity for the Writing Project people in the audience, who are going to be most of them. I'm sure they'd love to hear your story. How did you get involved with your writing project? And besides your over 30 years in your writing group, what has your long relationship with the Connecticut Fairfield Writing Project looked like?
Well, I the same principal who talked me into being the cheerleader coach said, there's this writing project thing. And he was one of these guys that was an encourager. I always felt like he never really understood what he was, where he was sending us, but he loved new ideas. And so in 1986, I was in my fourth year of teaching, and I met just the most incredible, bright, super positive, high energy people. And I knew I had to work hard to keep up with them. Like Fig Age is just a powerhouse. She was really, started the project. Del Shortlip, we mentioned, was in it with me. Bob Wilson, Bill McCarthy, Ann Alpert. There was just these amazing people. And afterwards, we started our writing group, which helped. But at that time, there was money for, schools had more money for professional development in our area. And so they'd hire us to give workshops in the afternoon. And I would get, initially, would mentor with someone who'd done it before. And then I'd sort of work with someone who was on the same level and start out with writing process. And then it turned into, what do you want? Let's figure something out. And I just learned so much, because when someone said, we don't know how to revise, and I'd say, yeah, I don't know how to revise. And I would go and we'd do a lot of research and we'd try to put it into this model of take the research, give you something that you can use tomorrow and an idea you can keep using again and again and again, and get that to classroom teachers. And I should add, my other suggestion is to, I tell students this all the time, steal boldly, take ideas from everyone else and use them. And if you feel it's too close, you give credit, but writers do this all the time.
Of course.
And you need to do that as a teacher too. And just what appeals to you is different than what'll appeal to someone else, the way you put it into, put the package together. But so the writing groups that I came back, we had a few advanced writing, like an advanced summer institute. So I took the first one and then I taught a few other ones. And then I've come back every year, I think probably for 30 years, to give the same workshop, Ryan. You might be getting sick of
it. It works every time.
It works every time. And it is the reusable idea workshop on how, like people say, to use models. So how do you use models? I do the same thing. I look at a poem and just say, it's a perfect gem. What can I take from this? I can't. And kids look at it and say, that's so good. I don't know how to do that. But as a way to kind of, open the hood and check out see how everything works, to look for the reusable idea and the form ideas and techniques. And so I give that every year and meet this whole new group of people who are a self-selected group. They're taking 3 weeks in the summer and staying in contact with them. And then when Brian came and Brian's an energetic fellow. I don't know if you noticed that.
I can't keep up with that guy.
So I always say, Brian, he's really made ADD work for him.
Exactly.
I'm the generation before that stuff was diagnosed.
It's not a disorder. It's a superpower.
It is a superpower. But I mean, that's the same thing. He is a super positive, doing amazing things. And just hanging out, I try to put myself in position to be with people like Brian and Faye and Dell. And I reap the benefits of it. That's the biggest thing for me. Is the people that I've met as sort of, just models of what you can do.
Well, I want to pipe in, because I just wrote down the word legacies. And, the National Writing Project, I learned of it as a graduate student, even though I wasn't a part of the writing project, because Marjorie Kaiser was at the University of Louisville. And I heard about it and I saw the teachers coming in and paid attention to it. And then she was collecting workshops for a writing project conference. And I asked her, I said, I'm a new teacher. I haven't even started teaching yet. What if we put together a panel of the veteran teachers, the teachers that everyone really likes to learn from in the district, and let's bring in all the pre-service teachers and let's just interview them and do a live panel. Let's have a conversation. And I did that as a 22-year-old at a writing project conference before I even went through the Institute myself. And I was like, I called that the legacy workshop, and it was so motivating. And when I think about Jack Powers, I think about Faye Gage and Del Shortlip and Bill McCarthy. These are legends in the state of Connecticut in terms of literacy instruction for a long time. And I was like, we need to tap the knowledge that they have so that we can carry it forward to the next generation of writing projects.
Nice.
That are entering, our companionship.
Yeah. But you know, one thing all those people have in common, and this is somehow, I think, advice to young teachers, they're all really funny and they all laughed a lot. And we had the most serious meetings on topic, you know, or top meetings on serious topics. And I'd swear we spent 20% of the time just laughing. There was just always some long strand of a gag going through. They had so much fun work that it was a pleasure. Going to meetings was fun because they were fun. They just enjoyed life. And that was something that was, I think, characteristic that all of the leaders of the project were. And that's a nice way. Go to work. I think... This is advice for young teachers. Laugh with your students every day and let them be funny. They can be really funny. I have a couple of kids that are former students or professional comedians now. And I'm like, you know, I saw it. We laughed with him before. That's great. But I think that really makes the day, that makes learning more fun. They're having more fun. I'm having more fun. It's really about me having more fun.
But exactly. When it comes down to it. Yeah. That's what it's about.
Maybe that's a good place for the question that I had next. You know,
that,
like,
that's great.
You know, I believe in the National Writing Project mission. It's my religion. It's what I go to when I have a problem. I call somebody in the Writing Project because they help me work through the best profession that there is to have. I mean, like, everybody has answers somewhere out there. But year by year, like, since I've been doing this, we are faced with more and more and more challenges. Especially with top-down management and lack of economic support to do this work that we love so much, right? And so we're always battling tests. We're always battling the heavy push down of the management, the lack of political knowledge about what goes on in K-12 classrooms, especially to build a successful writing program. And it's a testimony to everybody at Joe Barlow that their writing program is so strong. And I don't know how they do it, but they maintain it, and it's brilliant. And so I guess... my question is, like, what advice do you have, Jack, for, like, directors like me to work with school systems that are under all these other, you know, presentation or all these other pressures, you know, to go in other directions that may not be best for kids, right?
Well, I have two answers. One of them was... one of them really is, I think, and this is when you're working directly with the teachers in the summer. One of my favorite partners of presenting was a woman named Ann Alpert. And whatever the workshop was, she could launch into this impassioned speech about teaching being a subversive activity. And there were often times where I'd be like, well, Ann, we have 5 minutes left. So just a reminder, we were talking about conferencing. So we'll try to summarize this. But she inspired people. Like, yeah. You need to, you know, squeeze that in there. Don't say, oh, I got the test, I can't do it. Find ways to squeeze things in that are important, right? And you can make good arguments that, you know, even in the most prescriptive school systems, that they need to have this 7 minutes of free writing at the beginning of class to do this other stuff that we all know the testing stuff is important. Or they need this break to do something. I think kids feel like they have so little autonomy now that, like you were saying, oh, I have to do this and I have to do that. If I don't do that, everything's out of their control. Ask them sometimes, you know, okay, what do you want to do? Well, here's what we have to do. How do you want to do that? And you can't ignore the tests. You know, I always like, Our school is in the middle of a love affair with the new SAT data. They just love the data, and it's just gone nuts. But you can go look at it and say, all right, here are some things we need to learn. Now, what's the best way to do that that would be fun and interesting and develop these skills we know they need? Mm-hmm. And then try to point that out to my principal. We're doing this. We're doing some SAT prep today. But sometimes you have to sneak stuff in. I think with the writing center and our writing rubric and our writing portfolio, that started before, we were lucky, before so much of the move to standardization. But we started with a real problem. Like, our kids come in and say, well, Ms. Garvey says this is good writing, and Mr. Moore says this is good writing, and it's all different. So we got together to develop a rubric We didn't know it was a rubric. Well, that was what it was at the time. And then once we developed it, we said, well, how do we use this? And we were going to collect writing and assess it, which was really just a cumulative writing folder. Then we figured out how the kids could have choice in it. And one thing led to the other, but now we have an alternative. We have it's a tradition now, but it's very well tested. We've really done a lot of work that we have an alternative assessment for writing. And so we're not just saying we don't like that. We're saying this actually shows you how well kids can write. The other one tells, you know, like I coached for years and I'd always have some kid who was an incredible practice player. Anything you taught them, they'd break it down. But when the game started, they couldn't.
Right.
You got to make it up on the foot. Nothing goes to plan. You just got to like relax and play. And they couldn't do that.
Right.
That's what a lot of the SAT testing tests, not can someone really write.
Right.
So you need an alternative. So we have an alternative. And again, I don't want to come back to luck, but I've had probably 6 superintendents, about 5 principals who have year after year supported this, where most districts have a tendency to say, writing, okay, we got writing, we took care of writing. Next year we're going to go, this will be our initiative, and then they drop it.
Mm-hmm.
We have, of the 3 writing centers we visited before we established our own to try to figure out, you know, what would be the best model for us, their writing centers are all gone. And 2 of them have come to visit, one of them last Tuesday, to say, we want to start a writing center. What do you do? What does it look like? They're like, went to you. You had a really good one. So no one can maintain it. We live year to year.
Yeah.
The way school budgets are designed, it's the way we kind of think, and it's we never build on things and build something consistent. So I don't know, Brian, does that help, that answer?
No, it's good. It's good. And I actually think that we need to just push against some of the top-down stuff and say to our kids, hey, you know what? We're going to write a poem. Yeah, I know it's January. Yeah, I know it's February. Wait, I know it's June and you're getting out in a week, but we're going to write poetry, not just in April. Because poetry is part of the solution, and it is National Poetry Month. And so I think it's probably time for another Jack Powers poem. No?
All right, another one?
I think that's right.
Okay. Do I have, I don't know how much time. I have 2.
I think you have time.
That's even better. That's twice as good as one.
All right. Okay. So this is a, this is an example of the importance of revision and being able to keep your mind open. These 2 poems were all in one poem, which I loved because I loved writing it. I'm a terrible judge of my own poetry. But no one wanted it. And so I realized that I took this, the second one I'll read, out of the middle of it. They're vaguely related, but it's very much like, you know, when kids write a paper and then they have a paragraph, it's sort of on the same topic, but it doesn't fit. And you try to say, you're going on a bird walk here. And they're like, no, but this is also about
crossing. I love this paragraph.
Yeah. So that was it. I loved that paragraph. So the first one is the title poem. Everybody's vaguely familiar. 4 rows up in 27E, I saw Judy something. I started with A. Allison, Barbara, Carol, a teacher from the middle school, and her husband, Bill, or Bob, my son's old principal. The silver-haired women in 31A and 31B might have bowled with my mom. We might have bumped the Hines on the dance floor at my wedding as the band played All of Me. Even the steward, flight attendant, whatever guy looks like a goateed version of my cousin Mark. I doubt he's left his wife and children, but who knows? He's afraid to tell me, afraid I disapprove. But Mark, it's okay. I could be you on another plane, or you could be me sitting here wondering if the guy stuffing a too big, too green bag in the overhead is a taller, pockmarked Uncle Pete if he put on 30 pounds. How identical we almost are. How subtle the variations. I sit, hello, smile ready, still nursing the light stomach of the plane's takeoff, contemplating not just the unknown places I could go, but the people I might have been, like the tanner, rounder me I passed in 2B in sunglasses, clad in black with paint stains in the ridges of his knuckles. He could be the me who stayed in LA 30 years ago, returning now from some gallery opening or on-location background paint job, or just another visit to my parole officer. And now, as a stewardess, a dead ringer for Deborah Winger, drags her cart and hands an aluminum-wrapped chicken to the pale, bald man in 31D, I study his profile. We may have grown up in the same county. He may also have won Best Camper Award at Camp Holy Cross, or he may have a sister who taught my children Spanish. Below us, the shadow of our plane crosses Iowa fields, squares of yellow and green broken up by brown ribbons of river. The Spanish teacher's brother ponders the in-flight crossword. The way he taps his pen against his teeth seems so familiar, like a relative maybe, like me.
Yeah, like you.
Such
a good poem.
It is lovely.
Especially when since I took the other poem out of the middle, it confused everyone.
Well, I know what the other poem is. Having read them both, I'm like, really?
Yeah, I know.
Now that you've crafted them to be something else, it's hard for me to imagine that they ever weren't.
It's hard for me to also imagine. What was I thinking? That's all I know. But I try to, I know how it happened. It happened because when I'm writing, I'm trying to just stay open.
Yeah.
I love associative leaps, you know, like the poets I love to read just have these moments of like, how did we get here?
Yeah. So
I was doing that, but then I wasn't coming in later to kind of clean up and make things work. So, and the other one's a little more irreverent, I guess.
It is. I think it's a great, you haven't done much really irreverent, and the book does have some irreverence. Yeah,
when I saw that you were choosing this poem, it's one of my favorites in the collection too. And I had a young man who was autistic named Cody Graudick, and his last name was Grausberger Dick, and they changed the name to Graudick. They shortened it when the family came over. And he would do this soliloquy, and you couldn't stop him about the Dick family coming over to meet the Grausbergers and how the different Dicks would walk up and down the stairs. And it, the way he would just go, and like you couldn't stop him because he couldn't stop himself. And it was always my favorite narrative when he would come in and tell anybody these stories. And then he wrote this poem, and I was like, oh, there's Cody Graudick all over again. So. With that introduction.
A little preview.
Cody. All right. It's called Being a Dick. Once when I was painting the Milligan's house, I walked into the kitchen with Dick Jr. to find Dick Sr. and a gray-haired man in overalls holding an old plumber's wrench. When the elder Dick said, "Have you met my son, Dick?" the handyman smiled and offered a hand. "Dick Swanson," he said. And I figured, you know, when in Rome, offered my own hand. "Dick Powers," I said. "Pleased to meet you." The Milligans laughed. Dick the handyman offered a firm handshake, and life went on. Except the next fall, I got a job at the middle school, and on my way to lunch was greeted by a smiling handyman Dick. He taught eighth grade science on the second floor. Each day at noon, he'd smile and shout, "Hi, Dick," and I'd wave, "Hi, Dick." For 30 seconds every day, I was Dick. I wondered, if I taught next door, would we hang out together? Would I start helping out with handyman jobs on the weekend? Teaching to form Dick and Dick, Handyman Solutions, or Two Dicks, Handymen. Let's face it, being Jack is easy, but being Dick, that's tough. You're crushed or grow stronger. Proud of all the Dicks who persevered, who exchanged hearty handshakes in a secret society like I glimpsed in that kitchen. Four Dicks sharing a laugh.
That's good, Jack.
That is fantastic.
Wow, what a pleasure to have you on.
Identity and who else you might be. So can you see the link? Can you see how that paragraph?
I can, actually. That is how they got together. Yeah.
I also feel like, when writers used to type everything in a typewriter, they would say, when you cut something that you love, have a little, like a coffee can, and put it in that line in there. And maybe you'll use it, you know, because you can't bear to throw stuff away.
I love that.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that Bob Dylan writes a lot of his songs with just pulls stuff out of the coffee can.
Like, oh, I didn't use this.
Yeah.
Lonely coffee can collections.
Yeah.
I wasn't kidding, Jack, when I said I feel like a conversation with you was exactly what I needed today. I feel really thankful and honored to have been able to interview you today. Thank you so much. Thanks for your service. Thanks for everything.
And so everybody's vaguely familiar. There'll be a link on the National Writing Project site.
Yes.
So if you want to check out the poetry or just Google his name and find some of his poems that are published online in various locations. We don't have to just
forward him over to our... Right?
What's that?
JackPowers13.com is my website.
That's it.
Amazon.
Yeah, so now we can share them nationally, maybe even internationally, which makes me very happy as the Connecticut Writing Project director.
Well, I'm hoping to get my Amazon ranking like under 400,000. That is my goal.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. We'll push this out.
Yeah, we will.
Shop Amazon Smile, make a donation to the Writing Project, buy this great book.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Perfect. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
Everybody who's vaguely familiar wins.
Yeah.
And how to write a college essay. Like when I saw it in the collection and we do the college essay writing lab in the summer, how can you not share that? It needs to be a universal,
essay
activity in every classroom. You read that and you talk about it and then you figure out, how do you ignite the page? Yeah.
Exactly.
You don't want to scare the children too much, though.
Oh, yeah, you do.
On that note.
Well, thank you for being who you are, Jack Powers.
Thank you.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.